This week, an outwardly happy couple with a seemingly great marriage is ripped apart by a near-fatal gunshot, way too many secrets, and a long-term affair within the family. They say to keep your enemies close, but this is ridiculous. Welcome to My Crazy Divorce.
Failure as a husband, I'm a failure as a man.
It's just, I'm beautiful and I'm bright and I deserve better.
It's a great day, I'm feeling good. Oh, the possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile up to my lips.
Oh. Welcome to My Crazy Divorce, everyone. I'm your host, Tom Milligan, and boy, do I have a salacious story for you this week. Remember last week's show with Juanita and Billy? I'm pretty sure everyone could see what was coming from a mile away. Well, not this week. Steve and June's divorce came as a shock to, well, pretty much everyone. Especially Steve. I first heard of Steve when I saw the craziest TikTok I'd seen in a long time. Just this last January, like 4 months ago, where this guy about my age started telling his crazy divorce story in almost real time, right as it was unfolding. We'll cover a lot of the same ground in today's show, but trust me, he shares some stuff here that he hasn't shared there. So you'll want to hear today's show and follow him on TikTok. His TikTok handle is @TheLegitMac, and his content is awesome, because it's just raw, emotional. And as you're about to find out, Steve is a great storyteller. Before you hear Steve's story, hear this. I'm not an attorney or a therapist, and neither is Steve. So even if what we say on this show sounds like good information, please consult a qualified professional if you need legal advice or therapy. I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, OurDivorce.com. Visit OurDivorce.com if you're considering divorce and think you and your spouse can both be reasonable throughout the process. Their simple three-step process is specially designed to help amicably divorcing couples through the divorce process. And if you didn't use OurDivorce.com or have an amicable divorce, and you'd like to share your crazy story here on our show, please visit MyCrazyDivorce.com and apply to be a guest. I'd love to hear from you. Now, buckle up for a crazy story. Steve comes from what I'd call hardy stock. I mean, his father started out as a logger. You know, those guys with giant saws and axes? That there tells you that he's pretty rugged. I'm picturing the lumberjack from Brawny Paper Towels. But then in 1970, right before Steve was born, he joined the Oregon State Police Force, where he got his nickname Fuzz. Steve's early years were spent in small towns across Oregon, and he didn't sit around playing video games.
I grew up riding dirt bikes, so we would take our dirt bikes, and my dad being a cop, of course, I had to hide this from him. He thought we were pushing him through the woods to get to the beach. No, we were riding down the highway. So we'd ride these things, ripping down the highway as fast as we could. And then we'd hit these logging roads, and we'd take the logging roads up over the hill and into Gardner. And then we'd ride side saddle through town again until we hit the dunes. And we'd ride the dunes all day.
That sounds like a ton of fun, right? Steve's parents were very religious. Now, we're not talking about just going to mass every week. This was hardcore Pentecostal, speaking in tongues, or as Steve put it, Benny Hinn shit. So Steve and his twin sisters, Jill and Jennifer, were sent to a private Christian school. But just as Steve was entering high school as a 90-pound freshman, and the girls were entering junior high, Dad got a promotion and moved the family to Newport, Oregon. And the kids entered public school for the first time. That was quite an eye-opener for Steve.
I get out of Christian school. We move up there. We go to this high school, and it's Newport High School, and it's massive. So many people in that high school were assholes. Like it was like every coming of age high school movie you've ever seen, where all the guys are just absolute assholes and all the girls are, you know, way into themselves and clicky. That was Newport.
3 years later, Steve's put on a little size and Dad takes another promotion and moves the family about 30 miles south to Florence, Oregon.
Florence is a little bit smaller than Newport. It's about 6,000 people, I think, something like that. Newport was around 20,000 at the time, I think. So a little bit smaller town, a smaller school. But my sisters, it was their freshman year in high school. So I have twin blonde sisters who are freshmen, and I'm going in as a senior. And they, and I, again, I was a, you know, I was a small kid. I was finally starting to put on a little bit of size coming into my senior year. And they looked at me and said, we need to fix you. They buy all new clothes for me, make me do my hair, right? They do this, I mean, this whole thing, and fix me. I mean, they literally just fixed me because I was just a disaster. And I walk in freshman year or senior year, sorry, and they're their freshman year. And I was probably the most popular guy in school. It was the craziest thing ever. Yeah, I know. I went from being an absolute pariah in Newport to being the guy that everybody wanted at their party.
That sounds a lot like another 80s movie, Can't Buy Me Love. Great movie. And good on Steve's sisters for taking care of Big Brother.
Yeah, things switched up a lot for me from my junior year to my senior year. But, yeah, and then I wanted out of the house badly. The end of my senior year, I thought, I've got to go. You know, the religion, the overt religious thing. I mean, I had started to back away from that, and I wanted to do my own thing. And I love the ocean. I'd grown up surfing, you know, being in the ocean all the time on the beach. And I thought, well, I met a Navy recruiter at school one day, and I was like, yeah, I'll do that. So I went up and I signed up and did the tests. And then I brought the Navy recruiter home and said, hey, Mom and Dad, this is Larry Barr, QM1 Larry Barr, and he needs you to sign paperwork so I can go in at 17.
Larry Barr must have been quite a salesman, but I guess he had a pretty motivated buyer since Steve wanted to get away from the, what did he just call it? The overt religious thing. So how did Mom and Dad react to Steve's announcement?
My mom didn't like it. My dad was, pretty impressed, I think. And I went in the Navy right after I got out of, right after I graduated, about a month and a half after.
Well, that's great. I'm glad they didn't get in his way. While Steve's in the Navy, his dad left the police force and became a game warden and moved the family to Bend, Oregon. So that's where Steve went when he got out.
Anyway, I came back there and just loved the Bend area, which is central Oregon, high desert, really, really neat, beautiful area. Came back, you know, working like three different jobs. I think I was swinging a hammer, driving a snowcat, and working as a lifeguard. All three, you know, just all the time working, trying to grow hair because I was out of the Navy and now I could grow hair. So I got back into the church when I came back. Kind of got pulled back into that whole thing. She went to the church as well, part of the youth group. I was kind of like one of the mentor people in the youth group. So I had known who she was. We all kind of ran in the same circle, that kind of thing.
Just in case you're new here, the she he's referring to is one of the antagonists in today's story, Steve's soon-to-be ex-wife, who we're going to call June. Since they ran in the same circles, they both attended a birthday party for a mutual friend. Steve wasn't drinking that night, so he agreed to drive a friend's car to his own apartment and let the friend crash there for the night. As he was about to pull away from the party with his drunk friend, June hops in the car.
And that's when she started talking and professing that she had this thing for me.
Now, I've seen June. She's a beautiful woman. I'm sure she was gorgeous back then, too. I'm equally sure that Steve was completely flattered. And remember, they've known each other for a while. So just who is this June person? Turns out, she also comes from some pretty hardy stock.
Her dad was a logger. I mean, they had, you're talking maybe like, 10 different houses lived around, were around her out in the middle of nothing. And her dad was a logger, her whole family, they're all loggers. And like actual cutters, they're out there cutting trees and and doing their thing. And they actually own their own cutting company and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, her dad has, you know, he has like a patch on one eye because he had he was back cutting a tree after it fell and there was a loaded branch. So it had, you know, a bunch of loaded energy on it, was trapped. And when he back cut it, it came up and swiped his eye right out of his face.
Damn, that's got a sting. I just imagine this big, tough guy wrapping a bandana around his eye socket and telling everyone to keep cutting. That's one tough dude.
Her mom, June's mom, got pregnant with her when she was 14. Had her when she was 15. The family kind of, because they were also overtly religious, they basically forced them to get married.
Here's some advice. Don't ever let your OBGYN tell you you're in love. In addition to her mom's medical condition, Steve just brought up religion again. So I asked him where he stands on religion now.
I would classify myself as agnostic at this point. I believe that God may exist, but it's, you know, good luck proving it at this point. I'm open to hearing arguments. I don't mind talking about it, that sort of thing. But ultimately, that's kind of where I'm at. So.
Well, okay. That's pretty clear to me. Especially since I also consider myself an agnostic. Their medically induced shotgun wedding turned out, well, about as you'd expect it to.
Her mom went off on was cheating almost from day one, from the sounds of things, you know, cheating. I think their marriage lasted, this is her parents, about 9 years, 8 years, something like that, before she ran off with another man.
June's dad wasn't ready to give up just because she'd run off with another man.
When June and I, when we first got together, I heard stories that she had told. Like, she says, I don't have any pictures of me when I was little. And I'm like, what the hell? You don't have any pictures of you? What do you mean? She says, well, my dad burned them all. Like, he burned them? I guess, like, after she left, he just, you know, he gave it a little while, and then he pulled everything out on the lawn and just burned it. Burned all of it. Like, he didn't want to have any memories. Yeah. He told me, he said, 1 year to the day, because he couldn't get her to, you know, talk to him or do anything. He didn't know what really had happened. Kind of same thing happened with me, with her. You know, couldn't get any information. And he said, 1 year to the day, he, like on their, you know, the anniversary of when they split up, he said he walked out back in the back door and he took his wedding ring off and threw it into the woods. That was it. Then he was moving on.
Yeah, it sucks that June doesn't have any pictures from her younger years. But I personally think it was good for her dad to have a defined mourning period and then a sort of, I don't know, ceremony to signify that he's ready to move on. I like it. So June lives with her dad for a few years, but then moves to Bend to live with her mom and stepdad when she's 13 or 14. Fast forward 4 or 5 years, and we're all caught up to the point that June is hopping in the car with Steve after the birthday party, telling him she has a thing for him. Even though she's just 18 and barely out of high school, Steve's known her for a while and claims she was always very mature for her age. So, why not?
We end up, from that point on, kind of having this relationship. And then it became something where, I don't know, I at one point, of course, she came by where I was working and I just told her out of nowhere. I said, you know what? I think I love you.
Whoa, that was fast.
We were engaged within about 4 months and married within 6. And pregnant 3 months after that.
Holy crap. These two don't mess around at all. So we know it happened fast. How did it all come together?
We went to this restaurant, Tidal Raves, and which has basically stilted over the rocks hanging over the ocean. And I just, you know, I had spent every dime I had making her a ring. Had designed, had this perfect diamond, picked out all this stuff. It still chaps my ass because she always hated that ring. Drives me crazy. Yeah, in fact, about 10 years ago, she made me buy her a new one.
Huh. That story started out great, right up until that last part.
That I spent every dime I had on it. I think at the time I spent $3,000 on it. This was in 1996, you know, and almost every bit of that was for the diamond, right? So that was a lot of money back then, especially to a kid who's just swinging a hammer, you know? And anyway, I proposed to her. Everybody in the restaurant did the clapping and all that kind of stuff. You know, everybody clapped and blah, blah. And...
blah, blah. Sounds like most guys, right? I think that's hilarious. So even though she hates the ring Steve designed and spent every dime he had to buy, Steve and June are engaged. Let's plan a wedding.
Her mom wanted to do a big wedding. Had always wanted to do a big wedding. And I couldn't stand the thought of it. And neither could my wife or my ex at the time. She didn't really ever really want to do that. So there was one day she worked at a coffee shop at the time. She managed a little coffee hut. And I pulled up in there and I said, hey, let's go down and get our marriage license. Let's just do this thing. And she's like, all right. So we did. We got the marriage license. We thought we were going to be able to get married that day, but it took like 3 days to get the license. So we applied for our license, got everything together. We didn't tell anybody. We didn't know that they would put it in the paper. And of course, in 1996, everybody got the paper. So it got announced in the paper that we had our marriage license. I didn't know that was a thing. So all these people started hearing about it, like, hey, you got your marriage license. Well, yeah, but we aren't married. You know, we're trying to tell people we're not married yet. Then I rushed down after when we got our marriage license. I went down there, same little coffee hut. I said, hey, I called the Wedding Grotto, which is like a tuxedo rental place. They can marry us today. She's like, sweet. So I called her dad, said, hey, we're getting married today. He had like a 3-hour drive. He hopped in his car, took off and came up. My mom and dad, you know, they came into town. And then the stepmom or her mom and stepdad, and they came. So we had all those people there and we went out to the backyard of the Wedding Grotto. And this lady, I'm pretty sure she's a big lesbian lady, married us on the back porch. And there it is. We were married. And I wore a pair of jeans and a flannel and she wore a sundress and it couldn't have been more perfect.
I know I've said it before, but I think big, expensive weddings are just silly. So this sounds like the perfect wedding to me.
I mean, I had good friends of mine who said, you guys won't last more than a year. You know, other people saying, oh, 5 years tops. I mean, there were all these people like making bets on it. I'm like, are you kidding me? Because I came from a family where we don't get divorced. We just don't.
I know it's not nice, but the 7-year difference in age and the whirlwind romance, engagement, and wedding all add up to a pretty safe bet against these two.
But I thought, well, that just won't happen. I mean, I love her. Why would I ever divorce her? You know, what could ever cause that?
I get it, Steve. Nobody gets married just to get divorced. But it still happens. Unfortunately, more often than not.
There's almost nobody in my family that's been divorced. It's just like they just power through it. You know, if you run into shit, you just put your nose down and you get through it somehow, or you just live in separate bedrooms or something. I don't know.
I know I've said this before too, but we all deserve to be happy. So staying in a shitty marriage for the kids to avoid embarrassment or any other reason, it's not a good answer. And if you can't be happy with your spouse after doing everything you can to fix whatever problems exist in the marriage, divorce is not only the best answer, it's the only answer. Unfortunately, there are some who jump to divorce way too quickly.
She came from, you know, family who everybody got divorced. That was just kind of part of it, part of the deal. So we had two different philosophies on this going into it.
So here we have Steve and June, a newlywed couple with the odds stacked against them from the very start.
Of course, the beginning of our marriage, like you said, you know, lots of really hard times. I mean, you know, but we were in love and it was great. I thought it was just absolutely wonderful.
Given the title of the show, I'm always torn to hear a guest say how in love they were at the beginning. The more in love they are, the harder they fall by the end of the show. Okay, so here's the deal. I interviewed Steve for over 3 hours, so there's a lot to cover. You're not here to learn about Steve's career or the birth of their children, so I'm going to blaze through most of that so we can get to the part you came for, All right, here we go. Initially, Steve wanted to become a fireman. So he was taking classes for that, working full-time and volunteering on ride-alongs to gain real-life experience. Shortly after their son was born, Steve was working as a volunteer and was part of the ambulance crew that was first on the scene, where a small boy was crushed in the front seat of his car. He knew immediately that he was done with that line of work. So Steve started working construction while he figured out what to do next. One day, the normal delivery guy was out sick, so Steve was asked to do a delivery to the site of the brand new Home Depot that was being built there in Bend. While he was there, the Home Depot guys started asking him a bunch of questions about his construction background. I guess they liked his answers because they offered him a job on the spot as the supervisor over a new department in the store. Steve worked his way up the corporate ladder, ultimately becoming a general manager, which caused Steve and June to move their family to Southern Oregon, about 3.5 hours south from their families up in Bend. They weren't wealthy, but they never hurt for money. And Home Depot provided a good work-life balance. But things changed in 2008 when the economy went in the toilet. Home Depot was hit hard, so general managers ended up taking on more and more responsibilities, and the work-life balance went to shit.
I allowed it to impact our marriage. I should have seen the writing on the wall and said, you know, this is causing a huge divide between us. I mean, I was no longer really talking to her. You know, when I come home, it was, I'm on the phone, I'm texting, I'm emailing people, I'm going to meetings.
Steve gutted it out for a few years, but left Home Depot 7 or 8 years ago to start a new business and to regain that work-life balance.
It was like this weight lifted off my shoulders. I went and dove into becoming a home inspection contractor and started my own company and just threw everything I had into that. And we just spent so much time. We bought a big trailer, camp trailer, and we just ran the wheels off of that thing. Camping, traveling, you know, loving each other again. It was like discovering her all over again and us and our relationship and our kids.
Steve and June are together. They have a small but successful business. They spend quality time together alone and with their three kids. Sounds great, right?
I just felt like we were kind of on cruise control and everything was great. You know, I mean, sorry, Abby, the sex was good. You know, we constantly saying we loved each other, come downstairs, she'd be making coffee and I'd hug her and she'd touch my hand and say she loved me and all this kind of stuff.
At this point, it almost sounds too good to be true. Well, you know what they say. That amazing existence continued, at least for Steve, right up until the fall of 2021, about 25 years into their marriage. And that brings us to the part of the story you came for, something Steve refers to as the fuckening.
Deb, are you okay? You don't seem like yourself lately.
Oh my gosh, you know, Barry and I have been talking about getting divorced and just the cost alone, $15,000 just to retain an attorney.
I know, but why don't you guys try getting divorced online with ourdivorce.com?
I haven't heard of ourdivorce.com.
It's completely free to try, and ourdivorce.com can get you divorced for $299 as long as you and Barry can put in all the information and finish it. You could get it done in a weekend.
Well, we do get along. I mean, we both want the best for each other and just to get on with our lives and be happy. $299?
$299.
Ourdivorce.com?
Ourdivorce.com.
We're going to check it out.
Let's review the characters that will play a role in the fuckening. We already know Steve and June, Steve's dad, also known as Buzz, and Steve's twin sisters, Jill and Jennifer. And in case anyone really cares, Jennifer is the older of the two by about 7 minutes. Jill and Jennifer went to college in Dallas, where Jennifer met and married Charlie, and where Jill met and married Charlie's friend, Tim. Jennifer and Charlie have lived in Oregon and nearby Idaho for their entire marriage. Jill and Tim lived in Tyler, Texas, where Tim ran his own business. Now that we have the cast of characters, let's talk about the family dynamics leading up to the fuckening. Sometime around 2010 or 2011, it came out that Tim had cheated on Jill. Nobody knows how many affairs he had, but there was one he's admitted to. Jill chose to stay with Tim, but he was certainly kept at arm's length from the family. Sometime in early 2020, June, Steve's wife, asked Steve to mend fences with Tim.
Then about a year and a half ago, she tells me that she really wants me to reach out to him and kind of pull him back into the fold.
Forgiveness is an amazing process that does more for the person doing the forgiving than the forgiven. So on the surface, this seems like a good idea. I mean, it's been 11 years, and he's married to Steve's sister, so maybe it's time.
And I did. I called him and I said, hey, since if Jill forgives you, I forgive you, water under the bridge. I'm here for you kind of thing. So we started talking every couple of months. I call him, we talk and do this kind of thing.
Good for Steve. Like I said, forgiveness is an amazing thing. It even sounds to me that Steve and Tim had started to become friends. A couple of years go by like this when June has an even better idea.
Then she says, you know what? She says, he sold his business. Why are they still living there? You should talk him into moving up here and they should live near us.
That sounds great. But that's a big ask for Tim and Jill, right? I mean, yeah, they sold their business, but Texas is their home. But Steve's willing to give it a try.
I said, okay. That's probably a great idea. It'd be nice to have some family up here. So I called him and said, hey, you guys should sell your house and move up here. Man, he was on it. On it. I mean, it was like he was just waiting for me to just kind of put the stamp of approval on that.
Well, that was easy. So in the fall of 2021, Tim and Jill moved to Oregon to be close to family. As they were planning the move, Steve calls Tim with an idea of his own.
One of the things I told him about is that, hey, when you get up here, let's get you up here in time so you guys can go hunting with us. We have a big elk hunting trip we do with my ex's family. And it's always a really good time. You know, we spend a whole week up in the woods, just tracking animals. And it's more about the camaraderie and it's a very interesting thing. We're sun up to sun down, just, chasing through the brush. And it's a lot of fun. So this would be great. You guys get up here in time for this.
Sounds fun. June loves the idea, but cautions Steve about inviting Jill, saying it's going to be too cold, too much hiking, stuff like that. So Steve and June tow their big 36-foot trailer up north to join the family hunt. Jill didn't come, but Tim did bring their 14-year-old son along. As they arrived in the general area, they couldn't find June's family, and since they were out in the sticks, they didn't have cell service.
Immediately when we got there, she jumped in the Jeep with him, and they took off up in the woods to go see if they could get cell phone service. And I stayed with the camper in my truck because I didn't want to turn it around on this crappy road, and we didn't know quite where we were at. And the son comes bopping back and hops in with me, and I'm like, hey, what are you doing here, buddy? Oh, Dad told me to come sit with you.
I'm glad June and Tim get along and all, but that seems strange, right? I mean, this guy just barely moved from Texas to Oregon, like literally days before this trip. Oh, well. They find June's family and get their base camp all set up. Tim and his son are staying in the big trailer with Steve and June. A couple of days later, the group is out hiking a trail, trudging through some pretty deep snow.
She's kind of behind me, and we're going up this trail, and all of a sudden, gunshot goes off. I actually felt the concussion on the side of my face. Felt like somebody slapped me. And then my right ear was ringing, just ringing, like deaf in it, And I'm already deaf in my left ear from having a missile, Tomahawk missile go off by my left ear. So, I can't hear anything. I flipped around, the gun's on the ground, and she's looking at me with her hands up. She goes, I don't know what happened. And I'm like, well, why is the gun on the ground? And my, ears ringing and hat blew off, the whole thing. I'm like, oh my God.
Holy crap. That's insane. It had to be an accident, right? Like the gun just went off or something?
It was a Savage 270, I believe. And the Savage has a thumb safety kind of embedded in the stock right behind the barrel. The barrel comes back and it's kind of embedded in the stock. So you have to slide it back and forth with your thumb to, you know, pop safety on, pop safety off. And it's very hard. It'd be very hard to trip that safety accidentally. I mean, they design it specifically that way. Accidents do happen, but my ex is a, you know, she's a very experienced gunman, very experienced hunter.
Damn, that really sucks. I'm glad the bullet wasn't aimed just 2 inches to the left because Steve would be dead. 3 days later, everyone's kind of moved on from the accident and they'd moved further down the mountain. So it was a lot warmer and they'd been hiking all day.
I said, you know what? I'm going to go shed some of these clothes. I am really hot. I'm going to go get rid of some of these things and go dump them in the truck. I'll be right back. The young son says, I'll go too. Said, all right. So we bop up there. It was a lot closer than what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like a quarter mile or something. And it was just almost just right there, just a couple hundred yards. So we just dumped our clothes, circled back around kind of a different trail that was a lot easier, kind of came up behind him. And there they are standing next to each other. And he's got his hand on his hips. He's leaning kind of close to her, almost down into her ear. She's standing there. She's got a little branch off of a fir tree, you know, and just picking some fir needles. And, you know, it looked very much like a young couple standing there, young couple in love, you know, and immediately.
He knew. I know how that feels, so my heart breaks for him. He just knew. Steve's mind immediately flashed back to experiences and feelings from over the years that hadn't registered as red flags at the time, but that instantly came into focus for him. First, he remembered a trip they'd taken just 5 or 6 years earlier.
We went down to Tyler, Texas, where my sister and this is my sister and the cheater, Tim, is where they live. And we flew into Dallas, drove out to Tyler, saw them, stayed with them for a couple days, and then drove down to San Antonio to watch my ex's little sister swim. She was swimming for San Diego State. She was having a big meet there. We were going to go watch her swim. That's when they kind of reconnected. Anyway, and that's all the indications kind of steer that way. Like maybe they just started communicating, not like they went and made out or anything, but I think they started communicating, kind of confiding in each other, which is in effect cheating as far as I'm concerned. You know, if you're confiding with someone outside of your spouse and your marriage on the other sex, that's problematic.
He just knew. And remember that perfect life they had?
It felt like to me, we never argued, which I felt like should have been a red flag. And that's one of the things I read now is like, you know, people are going to argue. You really should. It's healthy because you have differences. And that's not, doesn't mean you're screaming at each other. It's just you sit down and you talk things out.
Yeah, he knew. Then he remembered that it was June that suggested Steve bring Tim back into the family fold. And it was June that suggested Steve asked him to uproot his family and move to Oregon to be closer to family. And June was the one who suggested Tim's wife, Jill, not be invited to the hunt. And then it was June that had gleefully jumped into Tim's Jeep to find cell service when they'd first arrived at the hunt. And it was June that had almost shot him in the head just 3 days before. He knew. But his blood ran cold when he remembered Tim's reaction to the so-called accident.
I remember looking past her after the gun went off and seeing Tim sit down on a stump, and he looked disappointed. I remember his face now. I can see it in my head, and he looked disappointed. Like, you know, something didn't happen that was supposed to happen.
Whoa, that's a lot. So Steve's standing there in the forest, knowing.
Immediately, I walked up to her, and we kind of walked ahead, and I said, we need to talk, like, right now. We've got to talk. And she says, okay. You know, I could tell she was kind of nervous, and we get up to the road. We just kind of bailed up, went up to the road, and started walking back to where all of our cars were parked. The truck we put our stuff in wasn't ours. It was one of the other people. So we walked past that. We were just walking up the road to get there. And we were about, you know, probably 15 yards, 20 yards ahead of my brother-in-law and his son. And I said, something's going on between you two. The way that you were standing there, I said, there's something going on there. I need you to tell me there isn't, you know? And she says, there isn't. And she grabbed my hand to hold my hand. Right. And she just kind of laughed about it, giggled and stuff. And I, that very odd reaction, because my expectation of the reaction would have been, fuck you, you know, and don't drop this on me. That's, you know, there's a bunch of shit. I'm, you know, this isn't something really angry. That's what I expected. And I didn't get it. I got giggles and hand holding, and it just didn't feel right.
I got to tell you guys, I teared up when Steve was telling this part of the story. Finding out is hard, but when your spouse doesn't even care, that's a whole new level of hurt. So Steve is heartbroken. He lets go of her hand and says they'll just have to talk later. Unfortunately, they're about 45 minutes away from their base camp, and they'd come in Tim's Jeep. So they all climb in for the ride back.
And he hops in and leans over and looks at me and says, this is going to be a long ride.
Yeah, that would be the longest 45-minute ride in history.
I was still kind of questioning myself. Like, did I see what I saw? Is that for real? You know, still kind of, and I kept pushing it down. Like, I did not want to believe that. Obviously, I didn't want to believe it. So I would have the moment and then, okay, I got to be just, you know, I'm freaking out over nothing. It was nothing, right? So when he said that, I'm like, what the hell?
After a ride that seemed like it lasted for hours, they got back to base camp. Remember, Tim and his son are staying with Steve and June in their trailer.
We get back to the camp. It's kind of started raining a little bit. Start a fire. We always start a fire. And he sat out there by the fire by himself in the rain for hours and never came in the trailer. We actually went to bed before he came in. Now, of course, now I'm thinking, okay, he was probably afraid that I knew something more than I did and was thinking I was going to, you know, do something violent to him, because of course we're up in the middle of nowhere and everybody has weapons, you know. Next morning he gets up early and he packs everything up. I walk outside, he's getting ready to leave. I'm like, you're leaving? This is like 2 days early. I'm like, yeah, he says, yeah, I got stuff I got to do. Okay. That's odd.
Look, Steve seems like the nicest guy on earth, and I'm glad we've become friends over the past few weeks. But let's face it, he's a military veteran, an armed and experienced hunter, and he knows Tim and his wife have a thing going on. I'd be worried too if I were Tim. But remember, just because Steve knew, he was still questioning and hoping for the best.
I walked in the camp trailer. I go over there and open it up, and you know, there's June standing inside. And I said, "So did you know he's leaving, right?" And she goes, "Oh yeah." And then she kind of played that off like it sounded odd that she already knew. You know, like why was she talking to him? Why? How did she already know? And he's like, "This is weird, right?" Because we were just in bed. So the only way she would have known, honestly, is if he had texted her.
So Tim takes off, leaving an awkward couple together in their trailer. That sounds fun. Later that day, they were out hunting. The group spread out to follow a bunch of cow elk, hoping they'd lead them to a bull. Steve and June were waiting for the rest of the group, and June sat down to wait.
So I sat down next to her. I put my arm around her because she's shivering, and she wasn't dressed for the cold. And we were all in a shady, kind of real shady area, and she was real cold to me. Like I reached around her shoulder and I grabbed her hand and I had my hand on top of hers and she pulled her hand away. Well, that's okay. This is weird. This is really strange. And then she said, you know, we should probably split up.
A very confused and heartbroken Steve walks away, pondering all that's happened, and starts composing a list of red flags on his phone. The list turned into a text message.
So I was going to send that to her, and I thought, nah, it's too passive-aggressive. I'm not sending her a text like that.
So just what was in that message?
Let me pull it up. Why not, right? And I'll read just the first part of it. So it says, I really need some reassurance. Nothing was going on with you and Tim. Even if it was just a crossing the line, emotional connection or something. I don't know. So I'm replaying this whole week in my head, and I'm having a hard time with things. Even this morning, I sit next to you, and I put my arm around you to warm you up. And I really felt like you could have done without. No hand touch, nothing. And your reaction to my bringing up feelings wasn't, you know, bringing up my feelings wasn't exasperated. It was pretty calm, which I wouldn't expect. I figured that if I was wrong, that you'd be pissed about me even thinking that. I know I'm probably blowing this up in my head, but it feels like you don't really want me around and your mind is somewhere else.
Yeah, good call on not sending that text, Steve. This is the type of message that needs to be delivered in person. So that's what Steve did. Once they were done for the day, ready to start the hike back to base camp, he approaches June and delivers the message he was going to send via text.
She tried to reassure me, and she says, absolutely not. You are, you know, almost kind of like then she was going to feign some exasperation with me. It was really almost faked, and that's the way it came across.
Once again, Steve is confused, hurt, and probably angry. But what to do? A while later, they're about halfway back to base camp when he feels a tug on his jacket. So he turns around, and June has a message of her own for him.
When we get back to the camp trailer, I'm going to fuck your brains out.
Now he's really confused.
It's like, well, shit, everything must be absolutely fine, because who would do that, right? So it must be, she must be legit here, and this must be the real deal, and it's not happening. Memory erased, right? Everything's good.
We men really do think with our little heads, don't we?
We did get back and she did. And it was weird. It was super, super weird, distant, felt wrong, felt very wrong. And it did from then on out.
Things were just weird. Steve knew. And I think June could tell her act wasn't working anymore. Just a week after she'd fucked his brains out in the trailer, at about 12 o'clock midnight on the morning of Thanksgiving 2021, Steve flat out confronted her.
And said, okay, I know something's happening. I need you to level with me. Is there something happening with you and him? And she leveled with me. And she just says, yes. She says, yes. I asked her, my question to her was, are you having any relationship with anyone, any emotional thing, anything, text, anybody outside of me, another man? Are you having any sort of anything? And she says, yes. And I said, oh, is it him? You know, is it my brother-in-law? Is it Jill's husband? Yes. I was like, oh my God. And, that was it for me. I mean, I walked around that house. This is 12:30, midnight 30 on Thanksgiving morning. And I walked around for a couple hours and I finally came back up and I woke her up. She was sleeping somehow. How long has it been going on? And she says, we've always had a connection. And that's the only thing she's ever really told me about the relationship or anything that's happened.
He knew that day in the forest, but now he knows. An hour later, Steve has a gun in his hand and he's contemplating suicide when his dad calls.
Probably saved my life and pulled me out of this, you know, thing that I had, this stinking pit that I drove myself down into, not being able to see that there's still life and you still have family and you still have, you know, your kids and, you know, it's not that bad. Even though it felt like the end of the world.
Like a lot of us. Steve used to judge other men that couldn't seem to handle losing their wife.
You know, you'd see men on this big introverted downward turn because they separated from their, you know, from their woman. And I just get disgusted. Like, come on, man, you know, suck it up. You know, you're a man, pull this out. You know, you're supposed to just, you know, grit it down and get on past it. I mean, really? And then it happened to me. And now I get it. I get it. Because, you know, I mean, I was, you know, I mean, I still have those ups and downs where you don't want to swing your feet out of bed in the morning because you lost your life. Yeah, that's what it feels like. Your life is gone. And now I get it. Obviously, like I said before, now I understand what people go through with this stuff. It's heartbreaking, heart-wrenching, life-changing stuff.
Well said. Life-changing is exactly right. So it's 3:30 or 4 in the morning. Steve's on this life-saving call with his dad, and he gets a text from June.
Don't drop the bomb on your family, not on Thanksgiving. I'm like, drop the bomb? Who gives a shit what day it is? You just ruined our lives. I don't give a, you know, I don't give a rat's ass if it's Thanksgiving. I don't care what day it is. You know, so I just thought, man, how insensitive. Who is this person? I don't know who that person is that texted me.
I agree. I think the act is up. What difference does it make at this point? So June's stepdad is somehow notified of the situation and agrees to drive Steve up to his parents' house, where the rest of the family, including Tim and Jill, are all gathered for Thanksgiving. Meanwhile, 3.5 hours north up in Bend, Dad's also contemplating the situation.
My mom and dad are the most loving people on the planet who would give you anything. I mean, my dad gave away our only car one time to a guy who needed it more than he did. You know, that's just the kind of people they are. And but they despised him. They saw something in him, and they had felt like they had, and, you know, very religious people, like, we don't believe in divorce kind of thing, right? But they thought that my sister should have left him 11 years ago when he cheated the first time. They just saw something in him.
Yeah. Dad knows. He also knows Steve is on his way up and that this could get real ugly real fast. He has to tell Jill. It was a full house, so Tim and Jill were staying in the camper next to the house. Now, this next part is how Steve tells the story, but keep in mind, he wasn't there yet, so this is what he's kind of cobbled together from the people who were there to witness this madness.
So my dad goes out to tell my sister, and he's walking up there, and Tim is standing outside, you know, and this is like 3:30, 4 in the morning. And as my dad's walking up, he says, just so you know, I don't have a gun on me. And, you know, making sure he knew. And of course, you know, Tim, first thing he does is latches onto that. Like, oh, what are you going to do? You going to kill me? You going to kill me, Fuzz? Is that what you're going to do? And then breaks into this whole thing where he acted like he was going to fight my 78-year-old dad. Yeah. So he turns around, goes up in the trailer and looks at my sister who was in bed. And he says, pack your shit. We're leaving. That's what he said to her. To my sister, who he cheated on. Pack your shit, we're leaving. I says, no, I'm not leaving anywhere. And she says, I'm here with my family for Thanksgiving. And then she looked at him, she says, you've done it again, haven't you? You've done it again. And, you know, accusing him, saying, you cheated. She just knew it.
Jill's done. She tells Tim to pound sand. She's staying. Tim now knows Steve's on his way, so he convinces his daughter's boyfriend to give him a ride home, 3.5 hours south, to Medford. As he packs up his stuff to leave, he does what every dirtbag does when they're caught. He deflects, gaslights, and tries to justify their behavior.
He actually did tell her his version of everything, which is basically... him just telling her that he had never really loved her, that she basically, it was all her fault that he did this and that they were meant to be together. This is, you know, Tim and my wife, that they were meant to be together. And it was her fault. Never, never an apology. If there is an apology, it's always like, I'm sorry you're feeling this way, but, you know, it's that kind of a thing that you get from these people. And it's like, my God, can't you just... I mean, I'm the one who got cheated on, and I have apologized for shit.
So Steve's riding north while Tim's fleeing south. They undoubtedly passed each other on the highway at some point that morning. Steve arrives at his parents' place mid-morning on Thanksgiving Day.
All the family's there, and probably the most solemn, horrible Thanksgiving we've ever had. You know, everybody's sitting around the Thanksgiving table, bawling intermittently. It was just crazy. You know, all of his kids, all of my kids, my sisters, you know, we're all just in shock, disbelief.
Damn. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Tim and June spent Thanksgiving together at Tim and Jill's house in Medford. Special, right?
She immediately went over to his house that night. And I think that, it wasn't 2 days later, that they rented an Airbnb and moved in that thing with each other. So they were there for 2 weeks while I went and cleaned out the house of my things and grabbed what I wanted, which probably wasn't enough. I should have cleaned that sumbitch out.
I don't know if this is a psychological fact, but I personally believe that good men, even if they're the victim of infidelity, assume an unfair share of the guilt and burden involved. I further believe that they do this because they've been raised to be the protector of families. But when the family unit dissolves, we feel as if we've failed. To compensate for this failure, we tend to give up more than we should in a divorce. I think that's what Steve did here.
I was trying to play the nice game with her, not realizing that she'd been playing me for a very long time. And I thought I could kind of, you know, I guess, work, you know, kind of keep things open between us and we could just work this out. And she had already passed that point. She was extremely vindictive and I had no idea to what point, but I think a lot of this came from her need to justify what she had done. And in order to justify that, she needed to villainize me. I had to be the villain. And if I was going to be the villain, then she couldn't work with me. She couldn't pretend that I was the nice guy.
Yep. And no matter how good Steve was, that's exactly what happened. Despite the fact that Steve didn't take much at all from their home, she has very publicly stated that he took everything, leaving her only a couple of corn dogs or something silly like that, just to villainize him. Of course, there's also very public evidence of her selling all their shit on Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist after he'd supposedly taken it all. So there's that.
Right after I left, then they pretty much moved into my house together and lived there to try to sell it. She ended up overpricing the house by like $80,000, I believe intentionally, so it wouldn't sell while they looked for a place to move into.
So while June is supposedly trying to sell the house, she and Tim make plans to move north. I assume to be closer to her parents.
The day before they were to move into a house up here. So, you know, figure that out. Then we got her principal broker, really, really great lady I've known for years, to take the listing. And she immediately lowered the house price down to where it should be. And it sold almost immediately.
June is a real peach, right? At 52, Steve's starting over.
I mean, I already lost my wife of 25 years, the mother of my children, the, you know, love of my life last minute. I've come to grips with that almost, you know, almost off myself. I don't know how many times. And now I've, you know, dumped my career because I couldn't be in the area where I was because I lost my mind. And now I moved up to a whole new area and just trying to figure things out and start over.
Part of starting a new life is ending the old one. Steve needs to get divorced.
You got to file for divorce. So I'm like, oh, well, shit. All right. So then I, you know, try to get a lawyer. Oh, my God. Every lawyer is backed up by like a month and a half, you know, and then they're interviewing you like, you know, whether or not they'll take the case. Almost like I think I called a few of them. They're like, nah, it's almost like I think the reason they didn't take it was because there's not enough money in it. Oh, there's not. Yeah, that one's going to be, you know, too simple. They don't want that. They want something where there's going to be some money in it. So finally, I did find a lawyer. They flaked out on me. I end up doing the paperwork myself, which is an absolute nightmare. Absolute nightmare. Did this paperwork myself. Filed it because I was like, I got to get this filed. You know, now I'm feeling like everybody's telling me I'm going to get it filed. So I filed it myself. Did the whole thing. Paid the fees. You know, I think it was like, I don't know. It was like $250 or something like that. $300. And, you know, got the thing filed. Okay, great. I'm sure I screwed it up. My new lawyer has told me that, yes, I did pretty well screw it up. But it's like, I think they write this stuff in a certain way so that only lawyers can really do it because they want your goddamn money. They want your money. That's all they want. They could give a shit about you and your marriage or who you are. They want your money.
No doubt about that. Have I mentioned that we're sponsored by ourdivorce.com? Unless you want to pay attorneys a lot of money for your divorce, you should probably check them out.
If both parties agreed, of course it's quick, and I think it is that way with just about anybody. If both parties agree, it's, you know, 3 to 4 weeks you could be divorced. It doesn't take any time at all. It's just a matter of kind of rubber stamping this thing. She agrees, I agree. You guys are divorced, you know.
I promise. I didn't pay Steve to make a commercial for ourdivorce.com, but he's hitting on all the talking points from his own experience. But in reality, for any divorce to be completed without involving attorneys, both parties have to be reasonable and willing to work together. That's not what's happening here.
She wants spousal support, which I think is laughable. I think she should tuck her tail and walk away, I think, with what she's done to me, what she's done to the family. But the problem is that she thinks she's truly justified in this. I think she's actually convinced herself that she's justified in this thing. And deep inside, she knows it's a lie. But I think she has convinced so many people around her that this, you know, that she was so emotionally abused or whatever she's telling them, that she's actually bought it.
And that's where we are right now, in what's likely to be a very long and expensive legal battle where neither of them will win, but their attorney certainly will. As I mentioned, Steve and I met through TikTok, where we both share our stories of being victims of infidelity. One of the most common comments I get is that there are always two sides to every story. I asked Steve if he gets that same comment.
I'm just going to tell what happened, and it has been my commitment to that is that everything that I say on there, everything that I've filmed on there, everything that I do on there is as truthful as I can possibly be. There's some parts of the story that I just can't expose right now that I can't talk about. They're too salacious. They're too, maybe even get me in a legal bind. So I just can't. But you know, with those extracted, I'm just trying to be as even to the point of being self-deprecating, because I've talked about like the things that I felt I've done wrong. You know, people will constantly pop in the comments and they'll say, there's two sides, you know? Well, sure, there absolutely is two sides. But if you just look at the basics of the story, and that is that my wife of 25 years professed to love me right up to the very last minute. I had no idea anything was wrong. And then all of a sudden, you know, I finally kind of latched my head around it, get her to say, yes, I'm having an affair with your sister's husband, who they were married for 26 years and have 5 kids. Yes, I'm having an affair with him. And then she leaves and moves in with him within 2 days. There is no part of that that you can justify. Not a bit of it. I'm sorry. I don't care who you are. You cannot look at that situation and say there's two sides.
Exactly. There are two sides to the story. But show me someone who thinks one of those stories could justify infidelity, and I'll show you someone who is or will be a cheater. Since that first night when his dad pulled him out of his deepest despair, Steve's had his ups and downs, but he's also had a lot of time to think about his life and situation. Throughout the interview, he'd throw out some great insights or lessons he's learned. They didn't really fit into the storyline, but they're so good. I really want to share a few of them with you.
Nobody's perfect. Everybody does things in their marriage. Everybody does things in relationships that you are always apologetic for, or that you wish you hadn't done or said, because we're human and we make mistakes. But there's some people that just cannot apologize for anything. They can't accept that they've done anything wrong, or they feel like if they do, that it's going to put them in a position where they're, you know, they're stumbling backwards now. Instead of realizing that by doing that, you know, what you're really doing is you're being the better person and accepting, you know, you've done something wrong and that you're willing to learn from it and move forward.
Yeah. You'll never get an apology or an admission of wrongdoing from people like that. I read somewhere that you shouldn't even ask for an apology because they've already shown their ability and willingness to lie, which means you couldn't trust their apology if they gave it. So why bother? Steve and I also talked about his TikTok content and why he does it.
Just talking about it so much and rehashing the story and just forcing myself to eat this stuff, you know, this vomit covered hairball or pool of vomit, whatever you want to call it, just forcing myself to eat that, you know, and really take it all back in and own it. What happened, was super painful, and I wouldn't suggest it for everybody, but for me, it just kind of seemed to work. It pushed me to the precipice more than once, you know, more than one time. I've been to the point where I can't take anymore. You know, I just can't. And I forced myself to do more, but I'll tell you, it has really opened my eyes to the whole situation And even this morning, you know, I'm having, like, every day there's a new revelation. There's a new feeling, a newfound feeling. Like today I had, for the first time, I felt like I could really let her go. You know, I could really let her go, really realized who she was for real and let her go, walk away from it and not feel, you know, like I've lost, like, you know, like people always feel a ghost limb or something when they have a limb amputated. That's kind of how you feel or think you're going to feel for the rest of your life. Like it's not going to be there, but you're always going to feel it. But I don't feel that way anymore. I really don't.
I love that. I'm so glad he's pushing himself to open up. I know he's helping people through some pretty tough times.
The hardest thing for me was, I kept thinking in the beginning that this was, I could fix it. And I couldn't. There was no fixing it. But I kept thinking I could fix it. You know, this was a mistake. She's been manipulated. It was him. It wasn't her, kind of thing. Anything I can do to make my mind feel better about it. And that wasn't the truth at all. And finally come to grips with the truth that this was probably more her. And that's something that my buddy of mine, that Craig Lemon, he told me right in the beginning of this thing. This guy should be a counselor of some sort. But he said, you're going to find out. And this was really early on. Like, I didn't want to hear this, but he told me, he says, you're going to find out, I think, once you get into this, that this was 75% her and 25% him. And I was like, huh. And that just felt so gross to me because, well, for one, that means that she chose him over me, right? It's very emasculating.
Yes, it is. I can't tell you how many men have commented on my videos making fun of me for my ex-wife's infidelity, and how many women blame me for it. It's embarrassing enough without these morons adding to it, so I truly appreciate it when men like Steve are willing to talk about it. At some point, I also asked Steve if he'd ever consider getting married again.
I don't know. That's my honest answer. I really don't know. It's tough to say. I mean, I am a little jaded at this point towards marriage, and maybe a little bit early on for me to even be able to see past that jadedness in a point in time when I feel like, it's there. I mean, so I know how I felt about marriage. I know that when I took my vows, that I meant every damn word of it. I mean, there's a reason that you stand in front of witnesses, because you are making a commitment to somebody that actually means something, that says for better, for poor, for rich or worse, for, you know, sick and in health, all this kind of stuff. You're saying that no matter what happens, I'm not going to let it come between us. We're going to talk this out. We're going to work it out. We're going to be together. Right. And that's my commitment to you, is that I will do everything possible to be with you. I meant every goddamn word I said, and she obviously did not. Didn't mean as much to her. And to me, that it's one of those things where if I'm going to go get married again, how do I know that other person means it as much as I do? You know, that was painful enough the first time around. I don't know if I could do that again. So, I guess the answer to the question would be, it would have to be somebody who I know for certain, without a doubt, was as committed as I was, loved me as much as I did them. And I knew that this was it. And we weren't going to be jacking around, and we would talk to each other. If I could find that person who I know I could talk to, that we could actually sit down and discuss differences and get through those tough times, and that I could trust, then maybe. I don't know.
I totally respect that answer. I think it's going to take a while for him to trust again. And who could blame him?
I look back on it now. I don't know if there's anything I could have done. I mean, you know, you always think when you get divorced, you're always thinking, God, what could I have done? You know, could I have hugged her more, kissed her more, told her I loved her more? What was it? There's something, definitely something I could have done to salvage this. And I think in a lot of cases, I think you just have that. It's something is planted in their head and it's already done. And I don't know that there's anything you could have done. And looking back like that too, isn't healthy, I don't think, because, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, that the only thing you can do from that situation now is just learn from it, and move on. I've always told people, I said, the next person that gets me is going to get the absolute best version of me, because my God, have I been through the fire. I don't know when that's going to be or if it's going to be. I mean, I'm really just loving just, you know, figuring myself out again.
Remember, this all happened less than 6 months before recording this episode. If he's figured that much out in 6 months, imagine him a year from now. This episode, more than any other episode, really hit home for me. Steve and I both teared up several times during the interview and had to take a break. So I truly appreciate his openness and willingness to share his life with us. His parting advice is profound. I hope you'll listen carefully and apply this in your relationships.
Number one, realize that there's a pattern to almost all relationships. It's crazy. It's hard to believe, but we all kind of follow the same patterns in relationships. And that's where you've got all these great books out there, you know, great websites, lots of advice on how relationships will look. Now, of course, there's lots of twists and turns to that. There's different careers and different, you know, some different paths, but ultimately we're really the same creatures. And, you know, in that, what you'd find is that if you are living an aberration from one of those, you know, from that path, that may be a sign that there's something that is wrong between you. And I would say, don't discount getting, you know, couples therapy, having somebody else kind of intervene. It may help cross that, you know, that divide. And even if you don't think there's a divide, just like with me and my ex, we didn't argue, the last few years. We talked, we laughed, we'd go on dates, all this other stuff, but there was never an argument. And I should have taken that as a red flag. I thought it was like, man, we have the perfect marriage. And that's what everybody, all my friends have said, like they were shocked when this happened, just shocked. Said, you were the perfect marriage. I mean, that's what my wife's little sister, her half sister, Megan said. She said, you guys were always my example. That was that was who I looked up to as the perfect marriage. You know, her half brother Cord said that to me. So you guys were always the perfect example. Everybody's saying this, but you get inside of it and you realize that there really wasn't that hardcore communication. We weren't talking about the deep stuff that we needed to talk to. And when you're married to somebody, there shouldn't be anything that you can't talk about. Nothing. I mean, if you're holding something back, if you feel like you have to hide something, then that's an issue. And I mean, that's, you know, that's something I'm be looking forward to in a relationship in the future, is that I have that openness with somebody that I can talk about absolutely anything with. And I didn't have that with her. So, you know, that would probably be the biggest piece is communication and just realizing that we all kind of follow the same path. And if you're not following that path, if something's different, then you may want to talk to somebody, you know. It can't hurt anything. You have such a massive investment in this relationship with this person, in the number of years, and your children, and all, you know, all these things you built together, this life that you built together, that spending a few bucks and a few minutes talking to somebody can't hurt. Can't hurt at all. So that would be my big recommendation, my big piece of advice.
I love it. I can't thank Steve enough for taking the time to share his painful story, especially since it's still so new and raw. I know how hard that is. Steve provides almost daily updates to the story and the lessons he's learned on his TikTok channel. You can follow him at The Legit Mac on TikTok. I hope you've enjoyed the story and learned at least one thing you can use to improve your marriage or relationship so you don't end up on my show. But if it's too late for that, and you have a crazy divorce story you'd like to share, please visit our website at mycrazydivorce.com and click on the Apply to be a Guest button right now. I'd love to help you tell your story. If you did enjoy the story, please tell the world by giving us a 5-star rating on the platform you're using right now to hear my voice. It really helps. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week for another crazy story. Have a great week, everyone.
It's a great day, I'm feeling